Samson. We're going to read about Samson and Delilah. We're going to read chapter 16 of Judges, which is found on page 182. I'm going to talk about this guy, Samson. Okay? Everyone got it? Everyone have a piece of rice? Is there anybody who doesn't have rice? Nice. Diana's got rice back there. Nice. Good to see you, Diana. One day, this is the story that Abby was alluding to about Samson and the prostitute and then Samson and Delilah. One day, Samson went to Gaza, where he saw a prostitute. He went in to spend the night with her. The people of Gaza were told, "Samson is here." So they surrounded the place and lay in wait for him all night at the city gate. They made no move during the night, saying, "At dawn, we'll kill him." But Samson lay there only until the middle of the night. Then he got up and took hold of the doors of the city gate, together with the two posts, and tore them loose, bar and all. He lifted them to his shoulders and carried them to the top of the hill that faces Hebron. Sometime later, he fell in love with a woman in the valley of Sorek, whose name was Delilah. The rulers of the Philistines went to her and said, "If you can lure him into showing you the secret of his great strength and how we can overpower him so that we may tie him up and subdue him, see if you can do these things. Each one of us will give you 1,100 shekels of silver," which is really a lot of money in that day. So Delilah said to Samson, "Tell me the secret of your great strength and how you can be tied up and subdued." Samson answered her, "If anyone ties me with 7 fresh thongs that have not been dried, I'll become as weak as any other man." Then the rulers of the Philistines brought her 7 fresh thongs that had not been dried, and she tied him with them. With men hid in the room, she called him, "Samson, the Philistines are upon you." But he snapped the thongs as easily as a piece of string snaps when it comes close to a flame. So the secret of his strength was not discovered. Then Delilah said to Samson, "You've made a fool of me. You lied to me. Come now, tell me how you can be tied." He said, "If anyone ties me securely with new ropes that have never been used, I'll become as weak as any other man." So Delilah took new ropes and tied him with them. Then with men hidden in the room, she called to him, "Samson, the Philistines are upon you." But he snapped the ropes off his arms as if they were threads. Delilah then said to Samson, "Until now you have been making a fool of me and lying to me. Tell me how you can be tied." He replied, "If you weave the 7 braids of my head into the fabric on the loom and tighten it with a pin, I'll become as weak as any other man." So while he was sleeping, Delilah took the 7 braids of his head, wove them into the fabric, and tightened it with a pin. Again she called to him, "Samson, the Philistines are upon you." He awoke from his sleep and pulled up the pin and the loom with the fabric. Then she said to him, "How can you say, 'I love you,' when you won't confide in me? This is the 3rd time you have made a fool of me and haven't told me the secret of your great strength." With such nagging, she prodded him day after day until he was tired to death. Boy, somebody maybe got identified with that over there. So he told her everything. "No razor has ever been used on my head," he said, "because I have been a Nazirite set apart to God since birth. If my head were shaved, my strength would leave me, and I would become as weak as any other man." When Delilah saw that he had told her everything, she sent word to the rulers of the Philistines, "Come back once more. He has told me everything." So the rulers of the Philistines returned with the silver in their hands. Having put him to sleep on her lap, she called a man to shave off the 7 braids of his hair, and so began to subdue him. And his strength left him. Then she called, "Samson, the Philistines are upon you." He awoke from his sleep and thought, "I'll go out as before and shake myself free." But he did not know that the Lord had left him. Then the Philistines seized him, gouged out his eyes, and took him down to Gaza. Binding him with bronze shackles, they set him to grinding in the prison. but the hair on his head began to grow again after it had been shaved. Now the rulers of the Philistines assembled to offer a great sacrifice to Dagon, their god, and to celebrate, saying, "Our God has delivered Samson, our enemy, into our hands." When the people saw him, they praised their God, saying, "Our God has delivered our enemy into our hands, the one who laid waste our land and multiplied our slain." While they were in high spirits, they shouted, "Bring out Samson to entertain us." So they called Samson out of the prison, and he performed for them. When they stood him among the pillars, Samson said to the servant who held his hand, "Put me where I can feel the pillars that support the temple, so that I may lean against them." Now the temple was crowded with men and women. All the rulers of the Philistines were there. And on the roof were about 3,000 men and women watching Samson perform. Then Samson prayed to the Lord, "O sovereign Lord, remember me. Remember me, O God, please strengthen me just once more. And let me with one blow get revenge on the Philistines for my two eyes." Then Samson reached toward the two central pillars on which the temple stood. Bracing himself against them, his right hand on one and his left hand on the other, Samson said, "Let me die with the Philistines." Then he pushed with all his might, and down came the temple on the rulers and all the people in it. Thus he killed many more when he died than while he lived. Then his brothers and his father's whole family went down to get him. They brought him back and buried him with Zorah, between Zorah and Eshtaol, in the tomb of Manoah, his father. He had led Israel 20 years. As many of you know, we recently were on a family vacation for 2 weeks. And one of the things that we did on vacation was we went to church. Go figure. How about that? Right? When it came time for the message, the pastor got up and started preaching. And as he was preaching, he warned us, we who were listening, and the setting was quite awesome, I might add. We were sitting in this outdoor church. They got the idea, just like us. In this outdoor amphitheater, there was a lake right there, and there's Rocky Mountains, snow-covered Rocky Mountains as the backdrop. So there we sit, listening. And as he's preaching, he's warning us who are listening, "Beware of bad people," he says. As he talked, he grouped people into two groups. Two categories. The first category was good people. And the second category was bad people. Bad people. As he talked to us who were sitting there, we were the good people, which I was thankful for. He warned us to stay away from those bad people who weren't there at the moment. Bad people like those people who wear spikes and black clothing. He goes, "Watch out for those bad people." Bad people like university professors and students. Yeah, bad people. Watch out for him. Right? Universities, professors and students who could be labeled as postmoderns. He said, "Watch out for postmodern people. Beware of them." He said, "Beware of bad people like women. Women who have had sex before they are married." Goes, "Watch out for those bad people." Oh, and then he added, "And men too," at the end. "Watch out for them too." He said, "Beware of bad people like good-looking, non-Christian, exciting men. Women, watch out for those good-looking, very exciting, smashing, non-Christian men." He encouraged the women there to marry Christian husbands, Christian men. Or he encouraged the women to stay with their Christian husband, even if they weren't super good looking or terribly exciting. He said, "Stay with them." He did. You guys are laughing. This is not a bad thing, right? He said, "Stay with them." Why? Because if your Christian husband is a little dull, not very exciting, he says, "Don't worry. They're at least reliable. Stay with them. Because they're reliable." At this point in the service, Amy turns to me. "Why are you laughing?" She turns to me And she says to me in her best red-green voice, if they don't find you handsome, at least they'll find you handy. Right? I don't know what that meant. That probably meant that I wasn't super exciting, maybe a little dull. But yet, I was reliable, so she should stick with me. Right? We were laughing too, by the way. As he talked more and more, right, we realized that he was working with two groups of people here. Good people and bad people. And as we're listening, we realized he assumed that he was talking to us here, right? We're here at 9 o'clock on Sunday morning, on a beautiful Sunday morning like this, right in the middle of the Rockies. We must be good people. We're at church. Right? And then he was warning us against, now you're going to leave from here, you're going to go out, and there's going to be bad people. Watch out for those bad people out there. Keep on the lookout for reliable, dull people. No. So my question to you is, where would you put Samson? Where does he fit? Is Samson good? There he is, man. Look at him. Is he good or is he bad? I've been studying Samson for 3 weeks now. I've thought about the answer to this question. What's the deal with Samson? Gord's been asking me, how's Samson going? He's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm working on Samson. Talks to me the next day. How's Samson going? I don't know. What's Samson going? Where would you put Samson? Where did Mark and Abby put Samson? Right, we just read a little bit of Samson's life. Today, I want you to go back all the way to 13 and read the whole of his life. Where do you put Samson? Where does he fit? Is Samson good over here? Or is he bad over here? As I wrestled with the question these past 3 weeks, the answer I came up with is yes. Yes. Is Samson good? Why, yes, he is. As you read the whole story of Samson's life, you will see that Samson has many good, and positive qualities going for him. The first of which is that from birth he was called and set apart by God. Abby had talked about this. He was called and chosen by God to be a judge, to be a leader of God's people. He was set apart. He was chosen. He was given a Nazirite vow. You are different than all the other people. You are set apart, chosen by me, God says, to lead my people. It's a pretty good thing. Samson was also physically strong. God blessed Samson with superhuman strength. That's a good thing every once in a while, don't you? Pickle jars. Wouldn't you like to have Samson around? Right? Car's giving you a little trouble. What would he do? He'd probably just pick it up and carry it. Where you got to go? Right? Can carry city gates. It's not a bad thing necessarily to be super strong. Samson was also very brave. Samson's lack of fear allowed him to do what many other leaders would be afraid or unwilling to do. This guy wasn't afraid to take risks or step into a hostile situation. Combined with his strength and his bravery, Samson made him an excellent soldier and fighter against hostile people around him. In Judges 15, if you read that, you'll read that he single-handedly fought and killed over 1,000 men. It's a pretty strong and brave guy. Samson was also smart. He liked riddles. He liked testing people. He kind of liked playing with people, right? He's a clever guy. Being clever can be a very good thing. Was Samson good? Yes. Was Samson bad? Well, yes. Samson was pretty impulsive. Believe it or not, he had a temper. You know anyone who has a temper? Can fly off the handle at a moment's notice? Kind of got to watch out for guys like this. Right? Even though Samson was smart, many of his decisions were driven by impulse or anger. Many of his reactions were not so smart. When the Philistines solved one of his riddles, he was so angry that he lost, went out and killed 30 men. The riddle was, if the people could solve it, he would give them 30 garments of clothing, 30 outfits, basically. Right? If they couldn't sell it, then they would give him 30 garments. This was a riddle he gave to the people before he got married to his first wife. Well, she kind of, Abby alluded to nagging. Right? She kind of nagged him. What's the answer? What's the answer? What's the answer? Finally, he gave in. Gives the answer. She tells the people, right at the last, right before the deadline, they give the answer. Takes him off. So what does he do? Oh, I got to give 30 garments. So he goes out and he kills 30 people, takes off their clothes, and gives the garments to them. There. Good decision, bad decision. What do you think? When Samson's father wouldn't allow him to see his wife after he was so angry about this incident, he got so angry that he went out and he found a whole bunch of foxes. He tied the foxes together by their tails so that they kind of want to run opposite directions. In order to get back at the Philistines, he tied these foxes, brought them to the fields, their grain fields, sets their tails on fire, and lets them run through the grain fields. What do you think happens with foxes who have flaming tails? They want to run. What do you think happens to the grain as foxes are running through with flaming tails? The grain catches on fire. Right? His temper, his impulses allow him to do such things. Was Samson bad? One of the things I learned and don't remember when I was in Sunday school was that this guy was a womanizer. He liked women. He allowed his eyes, the lust of his eyes, to control a lot of his actions. First it was the Philistine woman, whom he saw and had to have as his wife. Sees this good-looking woman, goes back home to mom and dad and says, "Dad, go get her. Get her for me. Gotta have a woman." Right? Then there was the prostitute. Right? Goes to the prostitute. Good or bad? And then finally there was Delilah, another Philistine. Being called by God, being set apart in Nazareth, he wasn't supposed to associate. He knew better. He went against it. He said, "I'm going to do what I want." Samson rebelled against God's commands for him. Abby mentioned he wasn't supposed to touch unclean animals. He killed the lion. Lions are unclean, not supposed to associate with them. Not supposed to associate with dead things. A week later, he goes back to the dead carcass. He associates with non-Israelite women. He's not supposed to cut his hair. All these things he does. Was Samson bad? Yes, he was. Samson had many good qualities, but he also allowed sin to gain a foothold in certain areas of his life. The Apostle Paul warns us against that very such thing. He says, "Do not allow sin to enter in and to gain a foothold, to gain control of you." What led to Samson's downfall was he thought, just like the people of Israel he was trying to lead and supposed to call back, they thought the same thing at the same time, is that they could hang on to and associate with a certain amount of sin in their lives. He was strong enough to handle it. Right, we can tolerate this. Samson thought that he could handle a certain amount of sin. The people of Israel, they thought they too could associate just a certain amount. They didn't have to listen to all God said. Right? They could associate a certain amount. But the problem with sin, however, is that when we allow it to enter our lives, even if it's only a small thing, it's going to destroy us. It's going to take us down. What we would call big sins, as well as very small sins, destroy our lives. While we were on vacation in Colorado, we also had the opportunity not just to go to church, but to get outside and enjoy the creation. So we got out and did a lot of hiking, a lot of time hiking in the mountains and through the woods. And this is the picture out of the window. We stayed in the condo, and this is what we woke up to every morning. Take a look at that forest and tell me, what do you see about that forest? Do you notice anything? Those are high tension wires, by the way. That's what those lines are. But what do you see? What do you see when you look at that forest? Do you see anything that catches your eye? Some dead trees. Reflection. Anything else? I want to draw your attention to those dead trees. There are a lot of dead trees in Colorado right now, in and around the Denver area and west of that. The trees are suffering from what they call, these are pine trees, the pine beetle. You guys have, hopefully in your hand, a grain of rice. Take a look at that. See how big that grain of rice is? That's how big a pine beetle is. Right? A pine beetle is the size of a grain of rice. And what that pine beetle does is it bores itself into these trees. Many of these trees are 50, 60 feet tall, 80 to 100 years old. What it does is it bores itself in, begins crawling around and lays eggs in there. And what does it do? It takes down the tree. It kills the tree. Thousands upon thousands upon 10,000s of trees. We stayed at the Snow Mountain Ranch for a week. People who had go there regularly say 5 years ago looked completely different. They have basically clear-cut the entire ranch because those little pine beetles have entered into these trees and killed them. Now they're worried about forest fires coming in, and they would just destroy the whole campus, so they have clear-cut all these trees. Sin is like those pine beetles. If and when it gains access into our lives, it has the power and the ability to destroy us. To destroy us from the inside out. What the pine beetle does to big, mature pine trees is what sin will do to us. It doesn't have to be very big, right? Oh, it's just a small thing. I can handle it. It doesn't matter. It'll destroy us. Question to you this morning is, what about us? What about us here this morning? When we started talking, we're talking about two groups of people. Good people, bad people. Which one are we? When you look in the mirror, how do you answer that question? Which one am I? Are you good or are you bad? The answer is, yes. Yes. We're all both good and bad. Each of us has God-given strengths. Each of us has been blessed by Him. But we also have sin that seeks to destroy us, that seeks to take us down, that seeks to prevent us from what God has called us to be. You're holding that grain of rice. What is your pine beetle? What is the thing that wants to burrow in? What are you trying to handle? What are you trying to manage? Samson thought he could tolerate it. He could handle it. I won't back down. The truth of the matter is that we all have sin in our lives which needs to be addressed and overcome. Both good people and bad people, like professors, right, at universities, have sin that need to be overcome. Both good people who go to church, and those bad people all out there, right, all of us, we need to address it. Question is how? How? How do we overcome that part of our life, whether it's very big or very small? It's not by trying harder to fix it or to stop it. We can't fix it on our own. We're not strong enough. Samson, probably the strongest man that ever lived, right? Given superhuman strength by God. Was he able to resist? The moral of the story, right? You nag long enough, you're going to get what you want. Was he able to resist? Was he able to control his temper, his impulses, his lust, his sexual desires for other women. This is the strongest man, one of the strongest men ever. And if he's not strong enough, do we think that we can? How then do we overcome? How do we deal with what's troubling us, what's seeking to destroy us? We overcome it by handing it over. By opening it up and allowing God to see it. We overcome it by bringing it to a place, to someone who can do something about it. We bring it to Jesus, the one who died, the one who was raised again, the one who overcame the effects of the sin that we're holding. We say, here, allow him to see it. Allow him to handle it. Samson was a judge. He was supposed to call God's people back. Back where? Call them back to God once again. Why? Because God is able to overcome. God is able to provide. God is able to forgive. We overcome it by remembering and believing that only God's grace and mercy, only God's forgiveness is powerful enough to overcome those things that seek to destroy us. We overcome the destructive effects of sin by turning our hearts and our lives to God and allowing Him to enter in and to make us whole once again. We overcome our sin by turning our eyes upon Jesus and looking full into His wonderful face. Throughout the story, when you read it later, you'll notice where Samson's eyes went. His eyes went a whole lot of places. But very rarely did they go to God. Samson was called by God to help people lift their eyes to Him. Where are our eyes, the eyes of our heart? Where are the eyes in our head? Where are we looking for solutions to what we're dealing with? How do we overcome it? We overcome it by lifting our eyes to the hills. The psalmist says, I lift my eyes to the hills. Why? Because that's where my help comes from. My help comes from the Lord, the maker of heavens and earth. This morning we have an opportunity to have the eyes of our hearts and the eyes of our lives opened. We have an opportunity to look to see, are we hanging on to something that's destroying? Are we trying to manage it on our own? Where are we taking our little pine beetle? What are we doing with that? What's motivating us? What's driving us? What's sustaining us? Where is our help coming from this morning? Samson was often controlled by his own eyes, his own self-interests, by what he saw. You have an opportunity to allow, to turn our eyes to God and allow Him to control. Would you pray with me this morning? Father, we come before You. We come before You as yes people. We come before You as both and people. We come before You as people who need You in our lives. We come as people who need to be healed. We come as people who need grace, Your grace. We come as people who need Your forgiveness. We come as people who need Your power. Lord, in these next few moments, by Your Spirit, open up our eyes, the eyes of our hearts, the eyes of our lives, and allow us to see truth. Allow us to see truth about any sin, any rebellion that we may be carrying along. and allow us to see the truth about the power that you have and the grace and the mercy and the forgiveness that you offer that is available to us. Allow us to see that if we are struggling, if we are burdened, if we are trying to manage on our own, allow us to see that there is another way. Allow us to see that you are the way, the truth, and the life. And turn our eyes and our hearts toward that. Lord, if anyone is burdened, just pray that you speak to them right now. Allow them to hear and to feel and to know in their hearts that you love and that you care about them. Because Abby was right. Throughout the story, you are the constant. You are there. When Samson comes back, you are there. Help us to know that when we come back, you are there. Dear Lord, as we sing these next couple songs, as we turn our eyes and our hearts toward you, allow us to know that we are forgiven, that we are restored, that we are healed by you. And help us to lay that thing down. To lay it down at your feet. Allow you to take it away. I pray these things in the name of Jesus, the one who makes this possible. Amen.